Hi, this is Elaine Koyama. I'm the author of Let Me In, A Japanese-American Woman Crashes the Corporate Club. And I'm with Marshall Davis of Davis Sound. Marshall and I began working 6 months ago, was probably the first contact. I found Marshall through a referral of a woman, Nancy Dahl, who wrote a book called Unplugged. Nancy and I had met through another networking connection, Stephanie Lenway at the University of St. Thomas School of Business. And so it's all through these connections that we come together. Marshall is part of the GEM trio. Jennifer Lund is the third person of the trio, who was the voice talent narrating my book. And Marshall of Davis Sound was the production side. He actually gave me the voice tapes and has done all the technical side of putting the book together.
Hello.
So we're really going to talk and try to focus, if we can focus, on the business of producing and making audiobooks. But some of that goes back to why are we doing audiobooks, and why did I feel it was so important to turn Let Me In from a paperback, an ebook, to an audiobook. And it was really my evolution of reading. I used to have walls lined with books. In my latest move, I have some books in boxes, but really I don't even have a bookshelf in my condo, which is amazing because I'm an author. But I'm almost exclusively ebook and audiobook at this point in my life. And part of that is because since I've become an author, I have my business is reading and writing. And if I kept every book that I have kept every book that I've read or listened to, but now it's on a reading device or on my iPhone. So why don't we just start on that whole area of that's why I'm here at the audiobook stage. Marshall, how did you get into the audiobook business?
Yeah, it's an interesting path because it wasn't something that I had set out to do and then went and did it. I had been a recording musician since I was about 15 years old. I worked in numerous recording studios as a musician, being at the other end of the, actually on this end of the mic that I am right now, and have done a lot of work with various bands, solo musicians, my own music, things like that.
And there's testament to that. We're sitting in this sound room. And there's three, I think they're guitars. They're of varying shape behind us. So you must still be practicing.
Two guitars, a bass, a
keyboard.
Keyboard workstation.
Yeah. There's a few musical.
I still do it. But that's kind of how I got into recording studios to begin with. And then at some point back in the 90s, I was doing a lot of recording, working with Orphan Records and various studios, and really loved it, really felt very comfortable. In fact, I almost felt more comfortable being in a studio than I did performing live. Hmm. It's a whole different feel. I mean, there's definitely a different energy to doing live, but in a studio, there's so much you can do that you can't really do live. And I used to sit down and stare over the shoulder of the recording engineer, figured out a lot of what he was doing, how he was doing it, learning Pro Tools, learning how you set up recording gear, all this stuff. So anyway, I had spent many, many years watching people do this, thinking someday I would love to be able to do this.
So, you know, there's a common thread here. We were talking earlier about your background, your education. You graduated with a what kind of degree?
It's a dual major of really physics and computer science.
Yeah. So and my partner in life did work similar to that. He was an electrical engineer by training, but there is that connection too about the technical and music and
yeah.
And we were looking at your software application and how all the dials that aren't real dials, they're digital They look like dials, but they're on the screen, right? And there is that technical aspect that I don't know if it's physics, but it's really not what I do in my sales and marketing life.
Well, for doing what I do, there definitely is both an artistic and a technical side to it. And so having a technical background in addition to having a music background really gave me a well-rounded education for being an audio engineer and producer. Mm-hmm. So eventually I had gotten to a point where I started acquiring recording gear and started recording some friends and friends of friends and things like that. And then at a party one time, actually before that, one of the musicians I was recording, his partner had written a book and said, could you do an audiobook?
Oh,
and I thought, I probably could. And I did it really more as a favor, recorded her book. She took it from, you know, post, put it on wherever she put it. And that was kind of the end of it for a few years.
And did you record that and put it on a CD?
I gave her audio files, MP3 files.
Okay.
And so she took it from there. Yeah. So probably 3 years later, I was at a party.
Must connection. Have been a big party guy.
Well, it was a connection of through a bunch of music people. And there was a publishing editor who I met, and she was asking me what I do and is kind of finding connections. And I said, and by the way, I did do an audio book. So that is something I could do with my studio. And I guess one other thing to add into this is that I took an early retirement package from Seagate, which is the corporation I was working for at the time in 2012, and had decided to do this recording business as a full-time job, sort of my retirement job. Mm-hmm. So in this party, I met this editor and I said, oh, by the way, I have done an audiobook and I could probably do more of those. She said, I have a lot of people for you to meet.
Yeah.
So she introduced me to several people who introduced me to a whole lot of other people who started introducing me to voice actors, who started introducing me to authors and Audible and ACX and all this stuff. And it basically just snowballed. And about probably a year later, I would say 50% of my business was coming from audiobooks.
Wow. So that says something about the audiobook industry, right? As far as how fast it's growing.
Yeah.
Like.
And you know, there are statistics that go back quite a ways. Probably the most recent statistic I've seen is that the audiobook business, and in particular digital download for audiobooks, is growing at about 40% a year for the last 2 years. Hmm. And it's been growing at least 30% for the last 7 years that I've been in
this. That's amazing. I mean, yeah.
And the interesting thing with that is that it's everything is shifting to digital download. Very few people are putting out CDs anymore. Part of the reason is it's expensive. There's inventory. It costs money to do it. It gets cheaper per unit if you start dealing with 10 to 50,000 units, which only the big major publishers are going to do that. But the other aspect is that with all the mobile devices, smartphones, tablets, everything like that, and now with even things like Alexa and Siri and, you know, all those things, hey, Google, there are so many ways to listen to audiobooks where you don't have to sit down, put on, you know, plug it into a stereo or things like that and listen to it.
Well, I know for me personally, I listened to my first audiobook maybe 10 years ago, and they were on cassette, those little cassette tapes. And I had like a whole, there was like, you got a box of them. And then late, and I listened to like one book because it just took so long and you really couldn't speed it up very much. I just had to listen to it. And then it went to CD. Now my car doesn't even have a CD player in it. So everything I do is on my phone.
You know, the funny thing is there are still people who refer to audiobooks as books on tape.
Books on tape.
Even though tape haven't been used for probably at least 10 years.
Yeah, tape. The kids wouldn't even know what tape is. Which brings me to who does listen to audiobooks? I mean, I would say I'm a recent convert, because in January I was on a road trip and I just hit those books as I was driving across the country. And I think in 3 months I listened to over 13 books, which is normally how many books I read in a year. So it really changed my life from how I interact and how I listen to books.
Yeah, I think to answer the question, I think audiobooks really are listened to pretty much all ages, all demographics, everything, partly because of how they've been made available. There are a lot of people, in fact, there's a statistic that says 57% of people who listen to audiobooks listen to them at home. And they're probably not sitting on the couch with headphones on doing nothing else. A lot of it is, especially with smartphones, tablets, wireless speakers, things like that, they can listen to audiobooks while cooking dinner, while doing housework, while crafting, sewing, you know, anything like that. And the ability to listen to audiobooks while you're jogging, working out, taking your dogs for a walk, you know, anything like that, with the portability of mobile devices and the availability of everything being moved down to a digital now, you can listen to audiobooks everywhere.
There's probably also this whole element of now when I don't have an audiobook, I'm thinking about like those radio stations that used to do the old time radio shows.
Yeah, radio shows.
I mean, they've got to be out there. I don't have a Sirius radio, so I can't find it. But there is something about that storytelling, yeah, and that I search for it now.
Well, I think that's one of the things that I've seen in published literature or published articles about the audiobook business, is that that is one of the motivations of drawing people into audiobooks, is they like the aspect of storytelling. And radio shows have now been renamed as podcasts. But, you know, which is another reason why podcasts are becoming very popular. People want to listen to storytelling. Mm-hmm. And so the creation of, whether it's a full-length novel, a nonfiction book, the idea of listening to somebody telling a story, especially with a good narrator that does character voices and a lot of things like that, it really draws people in. And you don't have to sit doing nothing else, reading a book, you can really just let yourself be absorbed into it. And I think there is a real aspect of that that draws more people to audiobooks.
Well, I know that there have been several times where I have sit in my car with the engine off, listening to an audiobook to end a chapter or end a passage, because I just can't stop.
Yeah.
I mean, you get that engaged with the whole process. You talked about the storytelling, but is there a difference between fiction and nonfiction and audiobooks? Are they both becoming audio, or is one taking more? And does it make a difference as far as who reads it? I mean, I have a memoir out. My Let Me In is a story about my 20-year career at Cargill. Many people asked me if I was turning it into an audiobook, and they basically were disappointed that I wasn't going to read it myself. I just never felt comfortable. But that's a nonfiction. Is there a difference? And what are the pros and cons of a real talent versus someone like me?
Well, let's put it as talent being placed in different places.
Yeah. Or misplaced.
So there's kind of two questions there. First, let me just say that both fiction and nonfiction are rapidly growing in audiobooks. So you see a lot of both, almost an explosion of both. As far as who narrates it, what I see in what is being published and my own personal opinion and the opinion of other people who produce audiobooks is, if it's a fiction book, you generally always want to have a professional voice actor. part of that is that it is much more in-depth storytelling. There are characters. You want to delineate who's saying what. You don't want to have to rely on he said, she said to know who's saying which line. You really have the ability to change character voices, and it helps to really draw people in a whole lot more. With nonfiction, I think it really depends on what the topic is. If it is a memoir, if it is a business book where somebody is preaching their business methodology, if it's a very personal story, if it's something like that, sometimes it works better to have the author narrate the book themselves, even if they're not quite the same quality as a professional voice actor. That said, if they really have issues being in a studio, they can't get through sentences without making mistakes, they're really nervous, things like that, even if it is a very personal story, sometimes it is better to have a professional voice actor.
I think that, for me, was an overriding decision, is I felt I'd be too nervous to do a very good job, and I didn't even know what a very good job would be. One of the things we brought up earlier was the issue of pacing and how the talent, the voice, reads it.
Yeah.
I mean, that there's that whole art of reading it that a person like me wouldn't know anything about.
And that's another reason why having a professional voice actor is good is, number one, I know this sounds funny, but professional voice actors know how to sit still. They know how to avoid mouth noises. They know how to produce a better quality recording sound. So in general, I mean, there are some very good authors who can narrate books really well.
Like Nancy Dahl.
Nancy did a great job.
Yeah, I was so impressed because I listened to her book, and she was the person who introduced us, and I was amazed at what a great job she did.
Yeah, she did narrating. A great job. There are some authors I've recorded that have a hard time sitting still. They can't keep their mouth in front of the microphone. A lot of things like that, which if you're doing public speaking, don't matter at all. And a lot of these people were very good public speakers. A lot of those rules change as soon as you walk into a recording studio. So a professional voice actor is better equipped and better trained to do things like that, which will in the end give you a better quality recording. So as far as pace goes, there is a target words per minute that audiobooks are supposed to be following, and it's about 150 to 155 words per minute. And that there are a couple of reasons why. Number one is, if it's too slow, then it has the risk of losing people's interest. And if it's too fast, sometimes people, even professional narrators, if they start going too fast, they don't enunciate the words clearly. They start making more mistakes that have to be edited out. And it starts losing that professional quality sound. So 150 words per minute is really a good pace to keep the listener engaged. Don't rush it. You don't want to drag it. But to keep that pace really consistent. And that's another thing with audiobook business, and Audible is one who will, you know, very openly publish these numbers, is they want these numbers because they want all their audiobooks to be consistent, which gets into mastering and normalized volume, which is one aspect of mastering, is they want the volumes all to be consistent so people aren't constantly fussing with the volume as they go from one audiobook to another, trying to get it to the right level. All the audiobooks really should be at the same level. The pace should be at the same pace. It's the consistency, and also consistency throughout the book. You want the ending to sound the same as the beginning.
Well, this has been my education, my MFA and MBA in writing. And one of the things that I wanted to do was have a professional do this book, because I didn't know, still don't know all the ins and outs of the audio business or the book business for that matter. But it's clear that Audible, the ACX arm of that group, they have very clear guidelines on their quality control and what is acceptable and what is not. So an amateur like myself would have had a hard time trying to do this on my own anyway.
Yeah.
And get anything accepted. I mean, the cost would have been huge for me to record and re-record and do all that. And on my $4.99 microphone off eBay, not to discount eBay products, but definitely to me, it paid going to a professional to do this and to learn the ropes.
And the guidelines aren't really guidelines, they're technical requirements.
Yeah.
If the requirements are not met, Audible will not accept the audiobook. And in fact, I worked with a couple of authors and narrators who had done books. They didn't do the right mastering. They weren't being accepted by Audible. They contacted me and said, can you fix this? I looked at what they did, figured out what the problem was, fixed it, gave it back to them. Now they're published. So the technical requirements are a big part of it.
So as we look at this, how long does it normally take to do an audiobook? I mean, you have to read it, so it's just the length of that, but also what else goes into it?
Well, part of it, the number of hours of studio time to create an audiobook, generally you figure about 1.5 to 2 hours of actual studio time to get 1 hour of finished audio. Part of the time, people are getting settled, they're changing chapters, I'm setting up new files, things like that. There's, you know, overhead like that. But also, no narrator, no matter how professional they are, is going to read without making mistakes. So, you know, there's that aspect of it. The other part of it is, from start to finish, a project I typically quote for a normal-sized book, which might be anywhere from 7 to 9 hours long, I generally quote 3 to 4 weeks, because also a narrator can't go 8 hours straight narrating books. Their voice gets tired. They start making more mistakes. And so we generally do recording in really 2 to 3 hour blocks. 2 to 2.5 hours is very typical.
So when does it make sense to do an audiobook? Should everybody do an audiobook? I mean, I feel like from my little small window on the world that sooner or later, every book's going to be an audiobook.
You're probably right.
Maybe not, but you're hoping that because it's going to be a boom business. But
so I can answer that kind of two ways. One is the financial side of it. If an author is really more focused on writing books, doesn't really put a lot of marketing and sales and time and networking and book promotions and a lot of stuff like that. If they're really focusing more on writing, or they have a full-time job and they just write on the side and they're selling 20 or 30 books a year, it probably doesn't make sense for them to do an audiobook from a cost perspective. The return on investment may be 50 years. So if you are a serious writer, you are putting the time into the marketing, you are going out and making it a goal to sell as many books as you can, from a cost perspective, it probably does make sense. I've worked with authors whose return on investment is 1 month. I've worked with others where it's like 14 months. But even if it's 14 months, you're probably going to be selling audiobooks longer than 14 months. So in the long run, it's probably good, you know, if you are really going to get out there and push your books, it probably makes sense. Now, from the other side of it is the demographics and customer base of who's going to listen to this. So if you have a print book, you're going to draw in an audience group who reads books. Soon as you put out an audiobook, now you're going into a different customer base. And so a lot of authors, in fact, there's one who gave me pretty much a really nice quote that says, from an investment perspective, you know, he's making money on it. But even if he didn't make money on it, or even if he even just broke even, he said he would continue to do audiobooks because it pulls in a different audience that might in turn be interested in his other books.
So in my world, what I've been calling that are revenue streams. So in the olden days, an author really had the opportunity to make money by selling books. Then they added speaking engagements because people wanted to hear from the authors. And to that, they are now adding the audio book stream because it's different people that are reading by listening.
It's a different group of people, and it is giving you a second income stream.
Right.
That is correct.
Yeah. And so as a professional author, someone who wants to make a living at it, I'm looking at what are ways that I can generate revenue on the books that I write. So this definitely, for me, was another way to reach an audience that would normally probably not be reading. My kids, for example, are not, I don't know, the last book they got probably was from me. So, but they are big podcast and audio listeners from their phones.
So, yeah, so you'll get a wider audience by having an audiobook.
Right. And maybe that younger generation that are more used to it. But I think it crosses demographics. I really think the audio wave is here to stay.
Well, the publishing industry sure thinks so because they're investing more and more money in more recording studios to produce more books. And as I mentioned before, it's growing at 40% a year over the last 2 years. It's been doing that for a long time. So it is going to continue to be a rapidly growing business.
And the costs are all really upfront costs from an author's perspective. So my book is, I'm going to have to reorder books, which is a good problem. Except that now I'm realizing every time I have to reorder books, there's the cost of printing, cost of warehousing, cost of mailing them out. Whereas in our case with the audiobook, I have a lot of upfront cost, but once that's done, that the costs are done.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's my, and the payment is on a percentage. So I don't have to pay the ACX, and we should talk about Audible versus the rest of the world, or the ACX framework versus the rest of the world. But I went through ACX, which is going to publish on iTunes, Audible, and Amazon. Is that
well,
right?
Amazon is the parent company.
Is the parent company.
But Amazon owns Audible, and ACX is really just, ACX stands for Audiobook Creation Exchange, and ACX is really the production arm of Audible. It's the one that links authors and narrators. It's the one that puts out the contract. They're the ones that get all the files uploaded to them, go through the QA process, make sure all the technical specifications are met. And once it gets through that, then it goes to Audible, and Audible is the actual publisher.
So the beauty of that model, from as opposed to the paperback model, is the if they sell, I get paid. If they don't sell, I don't get paid.
Right.
But there's no ongoing cost in the relationship. So
right.
We both benefit if the books sell.
And that's true with ebooks as well. It's the same thing.
Yes.
With everything digital, you have no physical product, therefore you have no inventory, therefore you have no reprinting or reissuing cost. It's all just purely digital.
Right. So, but I still want people to buy my book.
Yeah.
So we're not going to go down that path.
There are people who really like holding a book.
Yes, definitely. And as an author, I mean, there is some gratification in seeing your work in print. I will say that was worth something right there too.
And I do happen to be one of the people who still likes to read physical books.
It might be our generation. No, they're everywhere. Book readers are everywhere.
Yeah.
Good. Well, this has been, this is our first podcast of the GEM Trio. GEM is Jennifer, the voice talent. E is me, Elaine, the author. And M is for Marshall, Davis Sound. It was our little party this summer as we were putting my Let Me In book together. And we're hoping that down the road, we will have more podcast type events on different topics as we all grow in this industry. So this is it, okay. Marshall. It's been Elaine and Marshall. My book is Let Me In, A Japanese-American Woman Crashes the Corporate Club. You'll be able to listen to it.
Yeah.
At your nearest favorite Audible, iTunes, Scrib, whatever distributor out there. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Good.